Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Division of Allergy and Infectious Disease. As an undergraduate, he studied history and literature at Harvard, then earned his MD at Yale. He moved to the University of Colorado for internal medicine residency and chief medical residency. He also studied parasitology at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and set his heart on a career in infectious diseases. He matched at UW for an infectious disease fellowship in 2002, and fortunately for us, has stayed here since. Currently, Dr. Pottinger directs the UW Infectious Disease Fellowship Program, the UW Medical Center Clinical Infectious Disease Section and Clinic, and the Antimicrobial Stewardship Program. His other leadership activities include chairing the Infectious Diseases Society of America's Education Committee and directing a parasitology course for doctors in East Africa. Dr. Pottinger is a fellow of the Infectious Disease Society of America and the American College of Physicians. He has received the Paul Beeson House Staff Teaching Award, the Outstanding Continuing Medical Education Teacher of the Year Award, the UW Medical Center Teamwork Leadership and Caring Award, the Chief of Medicine Service Award, and has been elected as a Seattle Top Doc by his peers in the city. While he is not at work, Dr. Pottinger enjoys mountaineering. Students have interacted with him during their Invaders and Defenders Foundation block and also in the hospital setting during clerkships in infectious diseases and general internal medicine. Dr. Pottinger is well respected by the medical students and was voted by the graduating class of students to speak today at the Physician's Oath and Hooding Ceremony. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Paul Pottinger to the podium.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I am so honored. When I got the call, I could scarcely believe it. How could I be that old to give this lecture? Truthfully, I still think of myself as a medical student. Every day when I go to work in the hospital, I still get that rush of excitement, just like when I was starting the first year. The smell of the hospital disinfectant, the smell of a gangrenous foot, all intoxicating to me. Thinking back to my own med school graduation commencement 21 years ago, it was a little bit different. We invited Dr. David Kessler to speak. Dr. Kessler was our dean. He was fresh from directing the Food and Drug Administration. At FDA, he broke the back of big tobacco and got them to start paying for the cost of healthcare catastrophes associated with smoking. And he had all kinds of great things to say about that accomplishment. At least, I assume he did. I remember nothing of what he said. Not one word. I polled all of my classmates on Facebook, nothing. How sad is that? But let's see if we can conjure up something today a bit more memorable. And for those of you already bored and on your phones, suggested hashtags for today's exercises include hashtag UWSONrocks, hashtag I'm a doctor, so bring it on, and hashtag OMG, our commencement speaker is throwing hashtags. The spoiler alert is that if you want to hear the punchline is very straightforward. Each of you is amazing. You are now poised to begin an incredibly interesting, fulfilling career that will last you for all the decades of your life to come. But please let me work up to that. I think I need to work up to it. There's so much negativity around medicine today, isn't there? We've all heard this and seen it on social media. Doctors work harder than ever before. They are not paid as much as they should. They are under the influences of forces that are beyond their control. At least that's what social media tells me. One of my favorite memes I saw recently was pretty sassy. Being a doctor is easy. It's like riding a bike. Except the bike's on fire. You're on fire. Everything's on fire and you're in hell. Funny, but we're not funny at all. So I'm talking about physician burnout, of course. I would define burnout as, a lack of fulfillment and joy in our daily activities. People in America in a variety of different walks of life are at risk of burnout, but no one more so than doctors. In a recent survey with very alarming results, 15,000 American doctors were surveyed about their joy and fulfillment they get from their activities. About 45% reported feeling burned out on the job, and only 25% of those surveyed said that they felt very fulfilled and happy in their daily activities. This was consistent across all of the different specialties that were surveyed. Let me say that again. Half of American doctors surveyed said that they felt burned out. That is a healthcare crisis, if ever there was one. Now, why am I telling you this? You haven't even started residency. It's because, of course, burnout is totally preventable and treatable if we choose to be proactive and mindful in the way that we craft our careers and the way that we respond to the inevitable stresses that attack us from all different sides. When doctors are asked why they feel burned out, a number of themes emerge. Often it's an unbalanced work-life, healthy balance that people are looking for. People are proud to be doctors, but they feel broken by the bureaucratic complexity of care, dealing with healthcare insurance companies, wrangling the electronic medical record, et cetera, et cetera. Those things are real, and they stink. They really do. Take it from me. But they can be dealt with if we are willing to stand up and make a difference. Dr. Melinda Ashton wrote a beautiful article in the New England Journal of Medicine last year. You should read it. It's called Getting Rid of Stupid Stuff. And in this paper, she and her colleagues were able to take back their EMR and craft it to work for them. All of us can do things like this if we're willing to invest the time and sweat equity to do that. But you know, I think that the frustration that some doctors express about burnout and the bureaucracy of care, it's not really about the bureaucracy of care. I think it's symbolic and it's triggered by something even deeper than that. And that is, in my opinion, that our social contract nationally is broken, right? So medicine has operated the same fundamental way for so long that we actually take it for granted. The doctor says, I'm sorry you're sick. Thank you for coming. Pay me money and I'll try to make you better. It's so foundational that we assume that that's the way it should be, even though, of course, that arrangement is totally backwards, right? Instead of focusing on preventing illness, we respond to it when it pops up passively in our own practices. I think it's suboptimal that this is the way we're currently operating. Although doctors work incredibly hard, our society seems to look sicker and sicker all the time. For example, begin last year, for the first time in modern American history, the life expectancy among American men began to go down. It's not supposed to do that. Among American women, overall, life expectancy holds steady at 81.1 years, but among American men, the overall life expectancy has fallen. Currently, it's at 76.1 years. And this is not among all American men, but among members of certain ethnic or racial groups, especially men who self-identify as non-Hispanic African American. I want to make it clear, in spite of centuries of medical progress, human mortality is unchanged at 100%, but the mortality rate, our life expectancy is not supposed to go down. And when that's happening among any group, especially a subgroup within our society, that has to be symbolic that there's something that has failed our patients and our population at a fundamental public health and public policy level. I think it may be driven in part by the lack of trust that our patients seem to have in us. This is alarming. Like never before, patients are skeptical about us. They're skeptical of our advice. They question our motivations. They don't even trust our expertise or our qualifications to take care of them. The survey data are alarming. Back in 1966, 75% of Americans said that they trusted America's medical leadership. Today, that number is 34%. And only 25% of Americans express any confidence in the healthcare system in general. And they say, what about doctors in particular? About 58% trust their doctors. 58%. That is not good enough. The consequences are very real. I was talking about healthcare disparities before. Think about our immunization rates, which is a complete mess right now. So, you know, I think, and I don't blame the patients. Fake news and fake memes spread like wildfire through social media. The real news is tougher to spread. It doesn't spread as quickly. And just like it takes a discerning eye to tell fake news from real news, it can take a lot of judgment for an informed patient to understand the subtlety of what real medicine is about. The fact that we go through a difficult process with patients, talking about risks and benefits, instead of just promising some particular outcome. We don't promise outcomes, we promise to stay with our patients. We tell them that we will tell them the truth, that they will never be alone, and that we will always be truthful with them and with their families. I think doctors earn trust in their patients every single day when they have conversations with them at the bedside, writing papers that are peer-reviewed, lighting up social media. Do that if you say the right thing, please do. I think it's when we have these tough conversations with patients and their families in the most difficult imaginable circumstance. It's when we're willing to say that we are uncertain about the future. We can promise how we will behave, we cannot promise exactly what will happen to them, except that we'll go through that journey together. I think we earn trust when we are vulnerable and when we show ourselves to be human. I think that's what we all want in our own doctors, right? And so I think we should be role models to our patients in that way as well. To be clear, patients will not always do exactly what we recommend. I'm saying for the record, they probably shouldn't always take us on blind faith, but they should have faith that when we tell them something, we are doing it with the best of intentions, that we are honest with them, and that we are doing it because we think it is truly in their very best interest. It's about trust. Without mutual trust, doctoring is frustrating, difficult, ultimately actually impossible. Whether it's about take these medications, get that mole cut off, take this shot, trust is about communication, communication is about trust. The good news here is that we are doing well on a national basis in our doctor-patient relationships. U.S. ranks near the global top when patients are asked how they rate their last doctor's visit. We just rank near the bottom when people are asked whether they trust other doctors. The implication is, I like my doctor, the other guys suck, and I don't believe anything they have to say. Clearly, we have to do better. But first, we have to take care of ourselves. In my generation, self-care was not a thing. I think we are changing that. That has been our intention. I think we still have some progress to go in this area. For example, if I were to ask you, this is the interactive part, what is the first rule of medicine? First, do no harm. You shall all pass. That is right. First, do no harm. That's correct. But it's not complete. In my opinion, the rule should be first, do no harm to yourselves or to anyone else. If you are unwell, you may become unfit to practice or worse. And everyone finds their own pathway to wellness. Your results may vary. I'll share with you some aspirational techniques that have helped me over the many years. First, please be good to your people at home. This gets back to what Dean Ramsey was saying. Be good to your people, whether that's your biological family, your romantic partner, your friend. By your people, I mean the people who care about you and take care of you during this journey. Being related to a doctor is a great privilege. It's also very difficult. We should acknowledge that and thank our partners, our team, for what they do. Just do the right thing, whatever that is. So when you're at work, you can focus on being at work instead of looking over your shoulder and wondering if you should have done something different at home. Second of all, please acknowledge your mistakes. You will make mistakes, not nearly so many as I have made. You're very smart, but it's going to happen. To err is human, and after all, doctors are human. That's the whole point. No matter how much we know, there will be gaps in our knowledge. No matter how flawless we want to appear, we are flawed. We are mortal creatures, obviously. The question is, will you acknowledge your mistakes? More than acknowledge them, will you dig into them? Will you disclose them? Will you discuss them? Will you embrace your errors? A mistake is an opportunity for growth, for medical knowledge, but also, I think, for personal growth as well. Next, this is sort of strange, please keep a journal. Not for case details, although the case details are totally fascinating, but rather to record how you feel, right? Medicine may make you feel grateful or fulfilled or enraged or indignant or exhausted. The entire spectrum of human emotion is going to be there for you on display. I do predict that gratitude will rise to the top, and if you focus on those things that make you grateful to be a physician, then the negative emotions, they'll still be there, but they're easier for you to sort out. There is plausible evidence, yes, that if we focus on our gratitude, we can improve the biochemistry within our brain and the myocardial function of our hearts. I know you're skeptical. There are references. They will be under frigid matter at the end of the lecture. You're not going to want to keep a gratitude journal post-call. I get it, but occasionally, when you have a moment, please consider doing so. Next, read books. Real, paper, printed, you know the kind I mean. Not an electronic book, a real book. Not about medical textbooks, that's fine, you should do that too, but I'm talking about something totally different. Your brain will crave something else. And I like paper books because of the smell, the texture, the appearance of the word on the printed page. I think it's more evocative. You're gonna spend enough time looking at computers. Give yourself a break and do something a little bit different. Stay physically fit as much as you can. If all you have time for is a short workout, do that and feel great about that. Eat mindfully, sleep intentionally on a schedule as best you can. Most of your bodies will take a hit during residency. That's probably inevitable. That's okay, you'll get your fitness back later. You will do it. The point is, take care of your physical bodies. They are important. It's the only one you'll ever have. Please teach. Teaching is so fulfilling. Now, the idea about teaching is that you'll never know something as well as you do when you teach it. And I think there's nothing more gratifying than hearing thanks from the students, and thank you for your efforts. It occurs to me, we probably didn't teach you how to teach. I'm sorry about that, the curriculum's really full. It's okay, think about the teachers you like, borrow something from them. If there's a teacher you don't admire so much, just let it go, do something else. Consider teaching. It has been, at least for me, a very fulfilling thing to do. Please volunteer. This is a hard sell. Being a resident at the medical school, you get paid so little it feels like volunteering, almost. Almost. The point is, I want you to stay connected with communities outside of your medical lives, right? Whatever calls to you, right? March for Black Lives, March for Women's Lives, March for Science, but for God's sakes, march. Or reach out, or connect to the community that calls to you in whatever way feels meaningful to you. And above all, please, for self-care, be compassionate with your patients. Compassion matters to them, both emotionally and physically. Patients whose doctors are compassionate have better glycemic control. If they have diabetes, if they get a viral rhinosinusitis, their symptoms last less long. They are more likely to do what you tell them to do. And the surgeons out there, I know who you are, you're skeptical. Yeah, well, surgical patients coming out of the operating room, their postoperative wounds will heal quicker on average if they perceive their surgeons to have spent quality time with them on rounds. The point is, you're all great doctors, you're skeptical of what I'm saying. What I feel is that there is an emerging appreciation for the benefit, biomedically, of compassion, not only for the patients, but also for the person who is compassionate for you as physicians. I think these self-care activities that I'm proposing, nurturing each other, journaling, reading, exercising, teaching, volunteering, being compassionate, maybe they're beneficial or have been for me because they're active. They require active participation. You're in the driver's seat. You are in control of each of those processes. Take it from me, doctors do not like to be controlled. I know, I don't. Of course, self-care will only get us so far. I have to admit that sometimes patients do seem to be disconnected from activities that are honestly in their best interest. That could be dietary change with preventing obesity, addiction, vaccine preventable infections. Please don't even get me started on that one. My point is not that I have the answers here. Prevention is difficult. It sounds easy. It is hard. So I don't know what's best for our nation to take us to the next step. Maybe it's single-payer coverage. Maybe it's expansion of Medicare. Maybe it's expansion of Medicaid. Maybe it's training more doctors. Maybe it's giving everyone a universal basic income to spend on their wellness. I honestly don't know. What I do know is that it's time for us as a society and as a profession of physicians to have that conversation in a meaningful and respectful way. What do we want healthcare to be if we could make it anything that we want it to be? Should it be a human right? Accessible to everyone, regardless of their skin color, their gender, their sexual orientation. That's the right answer. Good. Currently, it's not that way. It's a way for us to enrich the shareholders of private insurance companies, etc. Should it be a hybrid of those two things? I don't know. But in order to move forward, we have to have that national, meaningful, deep conversation. As doctors, you are poised to lead that conversation. Please do. With your legislators, with your hospital CEOs, with your communities, and yes, with your patients at the bedside, in larger communal settings as well. Like it or not, you are experts in healthcare. Like it or not, your opinions matter and carry great weight. Leverage that weight for the communal good. I'll give you an example. According to CDC, currently in the United States, 10% of Americans still smoke cigarettes. They know it's bad for them, but quitting's hard. In fact, for most, it's very hard. When people who have quit smoking are interviewed, how'd you do it? They cite a variety of factors, but the most consistent recurring theme goes something like this. My doctor never gave up on me. She believed that I could do this. We did it together. That is such a powerful message, the power of a doctor's words, compassion and actions as well. That power lives, of course, in each and every one of you, both for your bedside counseling and also for your potential as agents of meaningful, deep, broad social change. You'll be told that things are the way they are for a good reason, or change would be nice, but the system's too big to fix. You'll be met with a thousand discouragements if you try to shake things up. But that doesn't mean you need to just sit there and take it. Individual change happens when people bind together, stand up, and join as a unified front to make a difference. And I know, looking at you today, that's exactly what you're going to do. So please pick an epidemic, something that calls to you, and jump right in. We have plenty of them. tobacco use, alcohol overuse, violence against women and children, handgun violence in general, opioid addiction, suicide, inaccessible reproductive health care for all, malnutrition, both over and undernutrition, vaccine preventable infections, bullying, STDs, untreated psychiatric illness, homelessness, the implications of ecosystem collapse on our drug discovery pipeline, and many, many more. All of these epidemics stem, I think, ultimately from indifference, from ignorance, and from division, from the process in which we look at each other through lenses that split us apart, gender, sexual orientation, skin color, as a way to separate us out instead of that rich source of diversity that binds us together into something great and something unique. I would suggest to you that these, I'm talking about healthcare disparities, of course, these healthcare disparities exist in our world, in our nation, and here in our city. Ladies and gentlemen, the solution to these healthcare disparities could come from many different sectors of society, but it's doctors who are positioned uniquely at the center of the paradox, I would say actually the oxymoron that defines our nation, and it is stamped on the coins that are in your pocket right now. E pluribus unum, from many, one. Doctors are all about that oneness, about bringing communities, patients, families, relationships together. And I think I see that in you. I see an eagerness for you to create treatment spaces that are safe, where patients are treated, not judged, regardless of what they look like, regardless of what they've done. And I think more than that, I see your willingness to become role models, leaders, to take that initiative and make a big difference. This all sounds like a lot of work, I realize. I mean, you haven't even started residency yet, now I'm asking you to take up this extra mantle as agents of change. You're right, it's gonna be hard. I won't lie to you about it. But if you don't do it, who will? We, our generation, we are with you, we have your back, we support you in this, but this is your time. This is your opportunity to lead and to take the initiative and create a future that is better for all of us together as a nation. I know that's what you're gonna do. And by the way, I've been talking about domestic opportunities. If you are called to international opportunities, do that as well. Global health is a spectacular field. I'm so fulfilled to teach overseas every year. If that's your calling, please do it. My point is that we can also be fulfilled here, domestically, in our daily practices and in our daily lives. So getting back to that punchline that I promised before, I will say it again. You, the graduating class, are now poised to continue this greatest adventure imaginable. You can take it from me. I've had my fair shares of great adventures, but nothing like this. Nothing like the profession, the calling, and the life of being a healer. I remember how intimidating and exhausting residency was, I really do. In all sincerity, I am envious that you get to do that now. That's how exciting and fulfilling it is going to be. And I think I speak on behalf of all of us here today to say that we remain enthusiastic about medical education. It's not the smells of a hospital. It's the chance to interact with brilliant, inspiring, optimistic students every year, just like you. All right, so to close these remarks, I require some participation from everyone in the room. Together, we're going to borrow a technique that was pioneered in pediatric anesthesiology. I am not a pediatrician, nor an anesthesiologist. It's called guided imagery, and I can do this, and together we can too. Thank you for playing along. For the next few moments, please consider holding hands with the people next to you, whether they are friends or strangers. Swapping hearts, this is okay. Faculty, this includes you too. Thank you. All right, now let's focus. Here's my request. First, family members and honored guests, please close your eyes and keep them closed. I want you to focus on the moment when you learned that your loved one was going to become a UW medical student. That pride and admiration, the joy that you felt at that moment, realizing that this person, who you have known for so long, perhaps since birth, was about to become a doctor. Focus on that happy emotion. Send that positive energy out into the room, share it, amplify it, and let everyone feel it. Now please keep your eyes closed. Faculty members, it's your turn. Please close your eyes. Faculty, please reflect on this class. The first time that you met them, it could have been a lecture hall, a small group discussion, the clinic on rounds. I want you to recall the pride that you felt when they nailed that differential diagnosis, when they presented expertly at the bedside, when they took a genuine interest in the lives of their patients, not as patients, but as people and as human beings. And also think of the pride you felt when the patient whispered to you later, "Give them an A, they're great." Now keep your eyes closed and focus on those proud, happy moments, amplify them, and send them out into the room. Graduates, please close your eyes too, and think about each of those same moments. When you realized that you were going to medical school, meeting your classmates on the first day, sitting for their first exam, interviewing, examining your first patient, presenting your first HMP, nailing that diagnosis, spending time with your patients, listening compassionately to them and making a genuine difference in their lives. The darkness that you see behind your closed eyelids is not emptiness, that is a world of infinite possibilities and accomplishments yet to come. And when you close your eyes at bedtime for the rest of your career, what will you choose to see? When I close my eyes, I see my family accomplishing amazing things. I see the mountains, tall, beautiful, and austere, so seductive. I see my colleagues, and that includes all of you, brilliant, energetic, and dedicated. And I see my patients, the ones I've saved, and the ones I have lost. Each a life that I have in some tiny way touched, each of them who has paid me back exponentially more so, and who has allowed me to grow and learn from them. I hope that when you close your eyes, you will see each other, and that you will see your patients as well. That is a privilege that you have earned by becoming physicians here today. Right now, we are all connected to each other, and you are connected to each other as a class, as a community. Please nurture those connections for all the many decades of your lives yet to come. Everyone, please take a deep breath in and hold it. And breathe out. You smell that? That's the smell of awesomeness. That's the smell of the future. That's the smell of UW School of Medicine class of 2019. Everyone, open your eyes, please. On behalf of the University of Washington School of Medicine staff and faculty, it's my pleasure to say that we are so proud to have trained you. We are so grateful for everything you have done, and we are so grateful for all the incredible things that you will do. Welcome to your new profession and to the next chapter of your already remarkable lives, truly in every sense. Thank you.
It is now my pleasure to introduce Dr. Suzanne Allen.